Hey, TV fans and fans of TV podcasts. We're in uncharted territory right now due to COVID-19, but thankfully we have television to turn to for all the information on what's going on, and as always, some entertainment to keep our minds off things a little bit. I'm Jim Halchman, West Coast Bureau Chief of TV Guide Magazine, and this week we're looking back at 1997, which is the time period for Hulu's new drama, Little Fires Everywhere. The 8-episode series, adapted from the best-selling novel of the same name, premieres on March 18th, and our Damien Holbrook recently sat down with executive producer Liz Tiglier about adapting the series, what it says about race in 1997 and today in 2020, and the serious star power she had with Reese Witherspoon and Kerry Washington in the lead roles. Let's take it away with Damien's interview.
Hey everyone, this is Damien Holbrook from TV Guide Magazine and TV Insider, and I'm sitting here with Liz Tiglier. Tiglier.
But I mean, really, anything is fine.
Showrunner on Little Fires Everywhere, Hulu's adaptation of Celeste Ng's best-selling novel. Let's just get right into it, because this, I watched the first episode last night.
Okay.
And I never read the book.
Okay.
So, totally drawn in, and I was super torn. Do I want to Wikipedia and find out where we're going?
Yeah, don't.
Okay.
So you did.
Yes. I just only half of it. I got up to the point where, like, you see where the families start to interact.
Okay.
Why this project? Why is this so important?
For me or in general?
In general.
I mean, I think it's so timely. Mm-hmm. I think it's so important because it's a story about, again, in this time right now, it's a story about race. It's about white fragility. It's about class.
Yet it's set in 1997.
Exactly.
Where those terms didn't even exist yet.
No, I mean, where people still kind of had this idea that being colorblind was a good thing. And it was fun to kind of go back and really dive into the language people were using and the way, you know, parents were teaching their children to think, and not that everybody was the same, but and how some of the language that we use now that feels common, people weren't using back then. You know, white people weren't using back then, but black people were.
Right,
you know, these are not new concepts. It's just taken us 20 years to catch up.
To catch up to it. And the way, it's so fascinating how in the first episode when Reese's character says African-American.
Yeah.
Like, she's almost proud of that. That's
definitely
the one she's using.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. So when did it come to you? When did the book come
on? So it came to me. So I met with Lauren Neustetter at Hello Sunshine, and we had this great meeting. And a few weeks later, she called me, and we wanted to find something to do together. And she called me, and she said, I have a project. I have a book. I'm sending it to you right now. You have 24 hours to read it and tell me what you think. So of course I dropped everything. I started reading it right away. And, you know, I've said 50 pages in, I was like, I'm 100% doing this. And then 100 pages in, I called her and I said, I'm doing this. I'm in. And then I read the rest of the book and, like, sobbed my face off and was just incredibly moved by it. And I connected to it on just so many different levels, but really as a daughter and, like, knowing that feeling of longing that probably comes from being an adopted kid, but, like, just that idea of, like, I think when you're adopted, you're even if and hopefully when you have a wonderful adoptive family, which I do, I think there's a search for mothers that continues,
right?
Because I think it's just in you. And so I really understand that, and this idea that they're each kind of coveting the mother of the opposite family, and how that feels to them and how that feels to their own mothers.
And it's very interesting in that, you know, Kerry Washington, Reese Witherspoon playing these very opposite types of moms.
Yeah.
And it's the children that you start to see where their parents' kind of dysfunction is.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
And I love that Mia, her daughter, Pearl, doesn't realize what she's missing.
Yeah.
She has a great relationship with Mia.
Yeah.
But she doesn't realize what she's missing until she sees Reese's character as a mom and in that unit.
Yeah, and these concepts of, like, oh, Reese stopped working full-time because of her children. Like, Reese is home every day after school for the most part. Or, you know, just all the sacrifices that you would make. And we even talked in the room about the Richardsons just having heavy furniture and heavy things, that there's a there's this idea that they're not going anywhere. Like, they're rooted. They're here to stay, and they're rooted in this town,
that
for better or worse.
It's so fascinating, because I thought of that last night when I saw, like, even when you walk into their house, it's those stone, it's that stone entry, and you're like, that is a, this is like a fortress.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And even the tree outside, and there's just this idea that they are so rooted, and we really explore it through the art, but this idea of they are so rooted in this town where it's probably not even escapable. Right, do you know what I mean? Right. It's like, are they wanting to be here or can they not leave?
Right. Are they almost like fated to be there?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's Shaker Heights, Ohio. Mm-hmm. Apparently the country's first planned community?
Yes, I think so. I'm pretty sure it was. And it was definitely... it was definitely the one with this kind of utopian idea of like different races living in harmony. And they really wanted to create this kind of racial utopia.
And Celeste grew up there.
Celeste grew up there.
So is the moment where you find out that this town comes with a book of directions?
Uh-huh.
Is that really a thing?
I believe it really is a thing. I haven't quite gotten to the bottom of that, but I think it is, because she gave us a packet.
Yep.
And I mean, I drew a lot from the book, but we also had a Welcome to Shaker packet that we got from Shaker Heights that we were able to look through.
Yeah, that's insane. So then when you get this project, Reese is already attached.
Yep, and Carrie.
And Carrie, they're both attached. So already, like, not only is two of the biggest, like, heavy lifting pieces done, but also Dreamcast.
Yeah, I mean, I was saying it was like the book. I had the book, and then knowing they were cast, I'm like, oh, it's like the icing on the cake. But it's not even the icing on the cake. It's like, there are two more cakes. It's like Reese and Carrie, and I'm like, I have three cakes.
Right. And then you kept piling on. You get Josh Jackson, who's phenomenal. You get those kids.
Yeah.
Lexi Underwood is phenomenal.
I know.
As Mia's daughter.
Yeah.
She is, there's so much going on in her head on screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really fascinating. Yeah. And then the Richardson's kids are, they're so, that's such a great family dynamic because the two olders that really pick on the outsider daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love it. And I also, you know, I love with Lexi Richardson, with Jade, I love this idea that she's kind of that, like, perfect daughter when Elena's around. Then when she's not, she's like cussing and like being rude to her siblings and like
she turns it on at the dinner table.
And I'm just like, oh, there's such a truth to it, and this idea that she still is the one who feels like she's molded in her mother's image, which in a way gives her character the furthest to go, I think,
to get away from that image.
Yeah
Because the youngest daughter, Lexi, I mean, she's just rebelling from the get-go.
Absolutely.
And so you get all these like little microcosms of relationships going on, and the parents kind of come in and out of them.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting dynamic between Elena and her husband as well.
Yeah.
Because as much of a provider he is, he has so many blind spots.
Absolutely.
And it feels like, because the way the show is set up, where we see how it ends.
Yep.
It's almost like, how did you not see this coming?
Yeah. And I think we do a lot to kind of explore that with Bill. And that's a place where I feel like we got to amplify kind of what was in the book even more and really expand out with it and really explore what you sacrifice in a marriage and what you sacrifice to build a family. And I think there's a lot that you could look at and critique Elena. And I think that happens in the course of the series. But I think there's a culpability and a lack of accountability from her husband that also can be explored. And this idea that she gave up parts of her life and he would to give him parts of his life, and how that works in a marriage.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's really,
and it plays very nicely opposite the bond that Mia and Pearl share.
Yeah.
Where you see them very working well as a unit early on, and those two clearly don't.
Yes. And we talked about that idea of also, like, when you're a single mom with a child, like, the onus on that child is that you don't get to just be a daughter. You have to be a partner.
Mm-hmm.
And that there is, when Pearl walks into the Richardson house, she can be a kid who's taken care of, and she doesn't have to be a kind of independent, self-sufficient partner.
And the way that you have her introduced into that world where Elena is there baking cookies.
Yeah.
And just sending her into the TV rooms, like, just relax.
So idyllic.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really captivating. And oh, so that's good. Why I'm like glad I didn't Wikipedia the rest of the story.
Yeah,
I can't imagine where it goes in the next seven episodes. What can you tell us? So like Mia's, Carrie's character, Mia, is an artist. Mm-hmm. Who was your artist?
Her name was Connie Martin. Mm-hmm. She is incredible. She's a black female artist who, what she did was so profound and beautiful. I mean, we came up with ideas in the room. Obviously, Connie took them and ran with them and made them, you know, added to them and made them even better, changed them, you know, everything we could possibly imagine. She took it and elevated it. But, you know, even the detail of like the bike that Mia's making for Pearl, that's Connie. Everything that Mia does as an artist, everything seen through Mia's lens, that is Connie. And it is amazing. It was, you would walk onto set and you would feel like you were in an art gallery. Right. And what she did as the final piece at the end, it's insane.
And again, it's so interesting because Mia and Pearl come to town. She's the artist and they're drifters, basically.
Yeah.
They get enmeshed with the Richardsons by basically renting the most amazing apartment from them. But our usual television, film artists are like free spirits and open and all this.
Yeah.
And Mia is very guarded.
Yeah.
She's very standoffish and very suspicious.
Yeah.
But that all seems to be because she's hiding stuff.
Yes,
where
exactly.
Pearl is clearly aware of that.
Yeah.
But what we will come to find is that Mia is guarded for very, very good reasons.
Absolutely. Right. I mean, listen, I think it's twofold. I think, you know, obviously Mia was not black in the book. Mia's race wasn't indicated. Mm. By making Mia black, I think that there is even if she wasn't hiding a deep, dark secret, there is a guardedness and a protectiveness that you would have with the Richardsons, with their family, with this life, with this idea that people are good parents because they have the money to be good parents and what makes a good parent.
Right.
So all of that would be there anyway. Mm-hmm. But then on top of it, she is hiding something that to have it exposed, you know, pulls at the very core of what she values most and holds most dear, and so she is fiercely protective.
Yeah.
And Pearl has grown up in an environment where Pearl has known not to ask a lot of questions because she's not going to get a lot of answers. And I think Mia has lived a life of moving around that fuels her art, but was initially motivated by the secret. And so it's like her life and art have woven together so that now moving around is part of her art and is part of her life as an artist.
And that actually sounds reasonable.
Yeah.
You know, like not knowing what's behind all of it. Like, oh, she moves around to like get new subjects. And you're like, oh, that makes a great idea.
Absolutely.
Right. Do we ever see these women come together as women and as mothers?
Yeah, you do. There's a wonderful moment in episode two where you see them, you really see them come together. And I think that, you know, theirs is not a binary relationship. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, one's not good, one's not bad, one's, you know, it's not like that. Their relationship, I think, is layered and complex. And I think what they see in the other person is what they fear most in themselves. And so they're both kind of holding up these mirrors to each other, but they do connect as mothers.
Okay.
The way they connect and how they connect and how they disconnect is all part of the story.
Well, because you get that great moment where Mia, the artist, shares an immediate connection with Elena's youngest daughter, who's a rebel and an artist.
Right.
And that's really the first time that you see Carrie's character smile at anyone other than her own daughter.
Exactly.
Genuinely.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you see like, oh, these two, this could be a very good, helpful relationship.
Yeah.
But would drive Elena crazy.
Exactly.
In the same way that Elena's relationship with Pearl will drive Mia crazy.
Exactly.
Because no matter how much one has or doesn't have, the one thing you never want to lose is your relationship to a child.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Nothing is more threatening than another mother coming into take your place.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait. It looks beautiful. You filmed it in California.
Uh-huh. We did.
But it totally looks like Ohio.
Perfect. We were in Pasadena. It was 100 degrees with lots of snow.
God.
A lot of pantyhose and wool coats. Yeah. Sweat our butts off.
Oh, but Lord alive. It was fun. And then you had those kids riding around on bikes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Did it all.
Excellent. Well, I can't wait for people to see it. Thank you so much for sitting down talking.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
I'm so happy to. Thank you. Thanks for supporting the show.
Thanks for the great chat, Damien. And one minor correction is the full name for the artist that Liz mentions is Connie Martin Trevino. Make sure to check out Little Fires Everywhere starting March 18th on Hulu with episodes dropping weekly. It's really great television with some stand-up performances across the board. And thank you for joining us for another episode of the TV Insider Podcast. Many thanks to our producer, Lori Perna, and editor extraordinaire, Sammy Junio. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast and follow us at TV Insider on Twitter and Instagram for more great TV coverage. And feel free to rate us on iTunes if you'll be so kind. Until next time, I'm Jim Halterman. Goodbye.